Are you looking for a Columbus car dealership built on tradition and trust? Byers Auto, family-owned since 1897, offers top new and pre-owned vehicles. Visit us or shop online at buyersauto.com. Byers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive, where we take these huge stacks of scientific sources and distill them into the critical, focused knowledge you actually need. Mm-hmm. Today, we're navigating the very complex world of immune system regulation, and we're going to move way past this kind of outdated idea of just immune boosting.
Right.
We're focusing on precision tools, things that balance, that optimize the body's defenses. And our deep dive subject today is thymosin alpha-1. You'll see it as TA1.
And this is exactly the kind of topic that needs a deep dive. In immunology, that word boost is lazy.
Yeah.
And frankly, it can be dangerous.
Dangerous how?
I mean, if you just indiscriminately turn up the volume on the immune system, you can.
Mm-hmm.
You can cause a disaster, a cytokine storm, autoimmunity.
Got it.
TA1 is the opposite of that. It's the antithesis. We have a really robust, decades-long paper trail on this molecule, a huge body of evidence.
Okay, so what's our mission today with this evidence?
Our mission is to pull out the crucial, verified context from all these sources. We're talking detailed summaries from DrugBank, extensive reviews on PubMed, specialized literature from oncology, from critical care.
The works?
The works. We need to understand the legitimate clinical footprint of TA1. And that's across really serious high-stakes conditions, chronic infections, acute sepsis, aggressive cancer treatments.
So by the end of this, you should walk away understanding not just what TA1 is,
but why it works, and why it works in such sophisticated ways. It's a masterclass in immunomodulation.
That sounds like quite a journey, from a simple peptide to a really profound piece of clinical utility. Okay, let's get ready to unpack this. But first, just a quick note. This deep dive into the science of sophisticated immunity was brought to you by InfinityPeptide.com.
All right.
Now let's jump right in. Let's start with the absolute basics, the molecular identity of our subject.
Let's do it.
To really appreciate what TA1 does, we have to start at that foundational level. Yeah. What exactly is this chemical structure we're looking at? And why does that structure even matter?
Okay, so we're looking at a small but mighty molecule. It's a peptide.
Peptide.
Right, a chain of 28 amino acids. And, peptides are just short chains of amino acids, much shorter than full proteins. And that size is actually one of its biggest advantages, functionally.
How so? A smaller size is an advantage.
It really is. Small peptides like this often show very high biological specificity.
Meaning they hit their target and nothing else?
Pretty much. They can target specific receptors with incredible precision, and they can be used and metabolized by the body very readily. They function less like a big pharmaceutical hammer and more like a molecular key, a very specific key for a very specific lock.
A molecular key. I like that. And where did this key come from? What's its origin story?
Its origin is probably the most significant piece of the whole puzzle. TA1 is a natural product. It was first isolated from thymic tissue, from the thymus gland.
The thymus.
Yeah.
Now, that name alone places it right at the command center of the adaptive immune system.
It absolutely does. That connection is it's extremely significant. Most people know the immune system is, it's everywhere. But the thymus, this relatively small gland just behind your breastbone, it seems to have this disproportionately huge and specific role.
So what is that role exactly? Remind us how TA1 fits in.
The thymus is... You could argue it's the most crucial organ for establishing your long-term specific immunity. It is the primary gland for T-cell development. That's actually where the T in T-cell comes from, thymus derived.
Right.
So you could think of it like a specialized military academy for the body's most elite fighters.
The special forces.
Exactly, the T-cells. They arrive at the thymus as these immature precursors, kind of like recruits. And inside the thymus, they go through this incredibly rigorous training.
A training process.
For cells. A training process. It's called positive and negative selection. They're taught to recognize foreign threats, that's positive selection, while at the same time learning to ignore the body's own tissues, that's negative selection.
So they learn who to attack and, just as importantly, who not to attack.
Precisely. It's how your body prevents autoimmunity. So if T cells are the special forces, the thymus is where they get their training, their certifications, and their orders.
Okay, so when researchers first isolated TA1 directly from that central training ground,
it immediately told them that this little peptide had to be intrinsically linked to the most foundational processes of immune competence, T-cell maturation, overall immune system regulation, It's a critical naturally occurring communication molecule. It's designed to ensure the proper training and deployment of these critical T cells right when they're needed.
Knowing that it originates there in the T-Cell Academy really makes your initial point crystal clear. This is not some generic booster. It sounds like an internal mechanism that's designed for nuance, for repair. So when we use the term immunomodulator, what is the technical difference between that and a simple stimulant?
And this is a vital distinction. We have to spend time on this because it frames everything about its clinical use. A simple stimulant, or, you know, a booster, it just increases immune cell activity indiscriminately.
Just turns everything up.
Right. Think of it like just slamming your foot on the accelerator, regardless of the road conditions. That might be fine if your immune system is, say, profoundly suppressed, but it's incredibly dangerous if the system is already dysregulated, or worse, hyperinflamed.
Because that boost could lead to...
to catastrophic collateral damage, like in a cytokine storm.
Okay, so TA1 doesn't do that.
No, it modulates the system. That means it doesn't just increase activity. It enhances or normalizes the immune response. It adjusts the dial based on what the body actually needs in that moment.
So its action is context dependent.
Highly context dependent. If the immune system is suppressed, say you're immunocompromised, TA1 helps ramp up the appropriate defenses like T cell production. But if the system is overactive and, you know, inefficiently managed, the research suggests TA1 can actually help guide it back towards a more balanced, controlled state.
So it preserves the defense while reducing that detrimental inflammation.
Yes. It provides regulatory intelligence, not brute force.
That concept of normalization is, it's really powerful. It suggests TA1 is most effective when the system is just struggling to make the right choice, when it's either too weak to fight or it's fighting itself.
Mm-hmm.
How does this one small peptide manage to have such a powerful and nuanced regulatory influence across the entire immune network?
It does that by interacting with some of the most foundational immune pathways.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we start to get a little more technical.
Let's do it.
Specifically, the research points to its role involving toll-like receptors, or TLRs.
Toll-like receptors. Okay, those are the essential tripwires of the innate immune system, right? The sensors that recognize patterns of danger.
Exactly. They are pattern recognition receptors, PRRs. They don't recognize, you know, a specific strain of flu. They recognize these conserved molecular patterns that are associated with pathogens, PMPs.
Like what?
Things like pieces of bacterial cell walls or flagellar proteins or bits of viral RNA. Things that scream invader.
Mm-hmm.
So by interacting with these receptors, TA1 stimulates these powerful downstream signaling cascades.
So in essence, it's helping the foundational defense lines, the first responders, correctly identify an intruder and then decide how strongly and appropriately to respond.
That's a great way to put it. It's helping the early warning system make a better, more informed decision about launching a defense.
And that signal, it doesn't just stay local.
No, not at all. That signal, which is initiated in part through that TLR interaction, it rapidly influences a whole diverse range of immune cells. It links the innate or rapid response to the adaptive specific response.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of cells are we talking about?
Well, we see TA1 influencing mature T cells, obviously,
yeah.
But also natural killer cells, NK cells. Those are the innate system's immediate assassins.
The ones that don't need prior training.
Right. And critically, it also influences dendritic cells.
And why are dendritic cells so important in this chain of command?
Because dendritic cells are the expert antigen-presenting cells. They're like the intelligence officers on the battlefield. They capture pieces of the invading pathogen, they process them, and then they travel to the lymph nodes to present these antigens to the T cells.
So they're the bridge, the link between the innate and adaptive systems.
They are the bridge. And by influencing dendritic cells, TA1 helps ensure that the initial threat recognition is correctly translated into a specific, adaptive, and highly powerful long-term response. So TA1 isn't just one piece of communication. It's optimizing the entire communication network, from the front lines all the way to the command center.
That is a huge operational footprint for a small 28 amino acid chain. So to just synthesize this first section, we have a naturally occurring peptide. It's isolated from the T-cell training grounds. And it acts as a core system regulator.
Mm-hmm.
It does that by optimizing these foundational sensors, like the toll-like receptors, and that in turn influences T cells, NK cells, and dendritic cells.
Mm.
The complexity there is why we have to call it an immunomodulator, not a booster.
Exactly. And to really understand its therapeutic success in diseases from cancer all the way to sepsis, we now have to drill down into the detailed, sophisticated mechanisms of how it actually works.
Okay, so let's dive into those specifics. How TA1 orchestrates this complete immune competence. You mentioned it manages the whole orchestra, touching both innate and adaptive immunity. How does it manage that dual role?
Well, the dual action is.
Yeah.
It's fundamental to what it does. Innate immunity is our immediate, you know, nonspecific defense. The rapid reaction force.
The wall.
And adaptive immunity is the highly specific memory-based defense that learns and remembers the enemy. TA1 impacts both of these arms at the same time, which ensures the entire defense is cohesive.
So it's not prioritizing one over the other. It's not choosing immediate defense over long-term strategy or vice versa. It's synchronizing them.
Precisely. Let's start with the adaptive arm, with the T cells. TA1 enhances the maturation, the proliferation, and the function of several really critical T cell types. We need two main armies mobilized for this to work.
Okay, the first being the commanders. The coordinators.
Correct. The CD4 plus helper T cells. These cells, they don't directly kill infected cells, but they are the crucial commanders. They coordinate whether the immune response should lean primarily towards, say, antibody production, humoral immunity, or cytotoxic killing, which is cellular immunity.
So they're essential for organizing and sustaining the fight.
Absolutely. By improving their function, TA1 ensures that the right strategic orders are being given, orders that lead to the most effective defense for that specific threat.
And the second army, the actual eliminators.
That would be the CD8 plus cytotoxic T cells, the killer cells. Their function is essential. They identify and they destroy cells that are internally compromised, whether that's because they're infected by a virus or because they've become cancerous.
And TA1 enhances their ability to activate and multiply effectively.
Yes, ensuring the body has enough of these specialized killers to go out and rapidly clear the target.
Okay, but we can't forget the innate side of things. How does it enhance that immediate response force?
So that immediate response is governed by the natural killer cells, the NK cells. These cells, unlike T cells, they don't need prior sensitization or training to identify and attack suspicious cells.
They're just ready to go.
They're ready to go. They look for cells that are lacking the correct self markers. By enhancing NK cell function, TA1 ensures the body's rapid response team is effective in those crucial early hours of an infection or when dealing with emerging tumor cells that might be trying to evade T cell recognition.
So if TA1 is ensuring robust readiness across the board, from the special forces to the frontline troops, the next logical question is how? How does it communicate these enhancements? And that brings us back to the chemical language of the immune system, the cytokines.
Mm-hmm.
We need to understand this balancing act. Why is this better than just making the whole system louder?
This is where the term immunomodulator truly earns its keep. The coordination happens through the controlled and appropriate production of these essential signaling molecules.
Mm-hmm.
The sources show that TA1 demonstrably increases the production of crucial pro-defense cytokines. Specifically, they highlight interleukin-2, IL-2, and interferon gamma, or IFN gamma.
Okay, let's break those two down. IL-2 is the T-cell proliferation signal, right?
It is the ultimate T-cell growth factor. Once T-cells are activated, IL-2 is what's essential for making them multiply exponentially. It's how the immune system builds an army big enough to overwhelm a pathogen or a tumor.
And interferon gamma.
IFN gamma is just as crucial. It's a master regulator of cellular immunity. It activates macrophages. It boosts the killing power of NK cells. And it really guides the whole specific cellular response. Increasing these two is definitely a key part of the enhancement process.
But a simple increase in signaling still sounds like loudness. And we know from conditions like severe sepsis or a COVID-19 cytokine storm that that loudness, that excessive dysregulated signaling, is what actually kills the patient.
Precisely. And if TA1 simply acted as an indiscriminate amplifier, it would be contraindicated. It would be potentially lethal in those critical hyperinflammatory states. So this is the core insight into its sophistication. The research indicates that TA1 appears to establish a balanced cytokine profile.
Explain what you mean by balance in technical terms.
Okay, so in many disease states, the immune system produces a huge imbalance. You get this excessive production of pro-inflammatory cytokines like IL-6 and TNF-alpha, which cause systemic damage. That's the overheating. And that's often combined with a subsequent profound inability to generate the defense-oriented cytokines, like IL-2 or IFN-gamma. The system basically freezes in a state of exhaustion.
So TA1's regulatory effect works on two levels, then?
Yes. Level one, it helps correct that subsequent immunosuppression by encouraging the production of the vital defense mechanisms, the IL-2 and IFN-gamma. Level two, In models of overwhelming inflammation, it helps regulate the system. It potentially shifts the balance away from those detrimental, overzealous, pro-inflammatory signals.
It guides the response towards a more protective, controlled state.
Yes. It's seeking equilibrium, not just maximal output.
I think we used a thermostat analogy before, but let's expand on that. It sounds like an advanced adaptive thermostat. If the body is critically low on T cells and key fighters, maybe from chemo or a chronic infection, TA1 turns up the heat, encourages proliferation.
Right.
But if the system is in hyperdrive, destroying healthy tissue in a chaotic septic response, TA1 helps stabilize that core temperature while still ensuring the defense mechanisms that do need to fire are firing effectively.
That analogy perfectly captures its regulatory nature.
Mm.
And this dual capacity-enhancing competence and modulating chaos is what's foundational to its therapeutic potential. It's why researchers immediately look to the most challenging conditions to test its efficacy.
Which brings us to the foundational data that proved this capability in the first place.
Hmm.
That level of sophistication, a small peptide governing the entire innate adaptive cytokine balance, it's incredible. It demands a really rigorous foundation of evidence. So what was the earliest research that laid the concrete groundwork for TA1's recognized role as an immunoregulator?
The earliest and most compelling work really focused on proving the core capability. The idea that TA1 wasn't just interesting in a petri dish, but that it could actually restore a compromised immune system in a living organism.
And the defining proof of concept here was the research involving thymectomized mice. Why that specific model?
Well, removing the thymus, performing a thymectomy, especially in young mice, profoundly impairs the development of mature functional T cells.
So you're creating a T cell deficient animal on purpose.
Exactly. These mice are severely immunocompromised. They lack the adaptive immunity that's crucial for long-term survival against pathogens. It's a very clean model of profound T cell deficiency, which allows researchers to measure the direct effect of an intervention on T cell restoration.
So what happened? What happened when TA1 was administered to these mice that had no thymus?
The key finding, and this was a landmark result for the field, was that TA1 administration restored immune function in these deficient models.
Wow.
It helped the residual pre-T cells, the ones that were there but couldn't mature. It helped them mature and proliferate into functional T cells. It reversed the state of profound immune deficiency. This result was massive.
It must have been.
It established that the peptide had genuine biological utility in fundamentally rebuilding immune competence. It was essentially substituting for the critical absent function of the thymus itself.
That is the ultimate proof of concept. I mean, if it can restore a completely deficient system in a controlled artificial setting, the question logically shifts to, can it improve an already struggling system that's fighting a real-world disease?
That was the next step.
So where did the research go after establishing that core function?
The research quickly pivoted to therapeutic applications in more demanding preclinical models, models that simulated human disease. They primarily focused on two areas, persistent infection and complex cancers.
And these models allowed them to study TA1 not as a sole therapy, but as a strategic enhancer.
Exactly. Let's focus on the initial cancer models, things like lung carcinoma and melanoma, which often involve significant immune suppression by the tumor itself. The key finding was synergistic effects.
Synergy, meaning the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
Yes. Researchers realized that TA1's value was maximized not when it was used alone, but when it was combined with existing treatments. So they combined TA1 with standard interventions, like interferon therapies or conventional chemotherapy.
What does that synergy look like in practice? What were the results?
Okay, so if a traditional treatment like chemotherapy achieved, say, a 20% tumor reduction on its own, and TA1 alone achieved maybe 5%, you might just expect a 25% reduction if the effects were merely additive.
Right, simple math.
But in the synergistic results, they observed that the combination improved overall outcomes and survival far beyond what the two treatments could achieve individually.
Hmm.
We're talking about significantly improved response rates and dramatically extended survival compared to the control groups who only got the standard non-TA1 treatment.
And this is where the complexity of TA1's modulatory role becomes so practically relevant. I mean, chemotherapy is inherently hostile to the immune system.
That's against.
It causes severe lymphopenia. It kills rapidly dividing cells, which includes T cells. So the body is trying to fight cancer with one hand tied behind its back.
Exactly. And that's where the synergy comes from. TA1 acts as a co-pilot, a biological protective measure. While the chemotherapy is highly effective at cytotoxic elimination, it creates all this collateral immune damage. It makes the host vulnerable, and it decreases the immune surveillance you need to clean up any residual cancer cells.
So TA1 mitigates some of that chemo-induced damage.
It does. By supporting the T-cell population and enhancing their function, it keeps the host's natural fighting force viable. It ensures the immune system is around and effective enough to partner with the chemotherapy. And that leads to the superior clinical outcomes they observed in those preclinical studies.
So it sounds like the preclinical work successfully established TA1 as this sophisticated strategic agent. It's a way to leverage the body's own intelligence to make these otherwise destructive therapies both more effective and safer.
Absolutely.
These findings must have been the green light for massive clinical investigation in humans.
They were. The success in restoring function and demonstrating synergy provided an extremely strong rationale for moving into large-scale human trials across the most critical areas where immune competence is the deciding factor between life and death.
Okay, let's make that transition to the human data. In the world of new therapeutics, we so often see this early promise just evaporate when trials scale up. What does the sheer scope of human research on TA1 tell us about its established role?
The scope is maybe the most impressive point for you to take away. This is not some theoretical compound. It is a long, verifiable clinical history. A comprehensive analysis of the literature shows TA1 has been studied in trials involving over 11,000 subjects.
11,000.
11,000 subjects in more than 30 clinical trials. This represents a massive, sustained effort across decades, and it's demonstrated signals of efficacy in highly challenging contexts. Chronic viral infections, critical care, specifically sepsis, and cancer immunotherapy.
11,000 subjects is a serious research commitment. Where did this journey begin clinically? Where was TA1 first applied in human disease management?
Its earliest sustained clinical application was in managing chronic viral infections, specifically hepatitis B and hepatitis C.
Right, and both of those viruses are characterized by this long, exhausting battle where the immune system struggles to clear the virus. It often leads to chronic infection, liver damage, and immune exhaustion.
Precisely. They are classic examples of persistent infection where the T-cell response is present, but it's often ineffective. Or it becomes functionally exhausted over time. So TA1 was a logical candidate because of its established ability to enhance T-cell function and proliferation.
And what did the data show?
The data from trials in these areas showed that when TA1 was used as an adjunct, so added to standard antiviral therapy, many patients demonstrated improved immune markers, things like increased T-cell counts and critically better long-term viral control.
So just like in the cancer models, it wasn't the star player, but it was the ultimate supporting actor. It made the standard therapy work more efficiently.
It supported the core immune processes that are essential for viral control. It allowed the host's own machinery to sustain the fight. Now, this therapeutic concept was tested globally during a much more acute, intense viral challenge, the COVID-19 pandemic. TA1 was used experimentally in several cohorts, particularly in hospitalized and critically ill patients.
And we noted the outcomes there were mixed. Why the variability? Why was it different from the strong signals they saw in chronic hepatitis?
The variability is key, and it underscores the importance of timing of an intervention in an acute disease. Some studies did report improved T-cell numbers and better outcomes, particularly in critically ill patients who were profoundly lymphopenic patients whose immune systems had just crashed. TA1 seemed to help restore that crucial population.
But others didn't see that benefit.
But other studies showed no clear benefit. And the difference really lies in the stage of the disease. In severe COVID-19, the patient often enters this deep state of immune chaos very, very quickly.
So if TA1 was administered early, when the T-cells were just beginning to crash, it might have helped restore that balance. But if it was given late, when the body was already in full multi-organ failure driven by a runaway cytokine storm.
The window for effective immunomodulation may have already closed. The immune dysfunction in a severe acute infection is just vastly different from the slow burn of chronic hepatitis. So the mixed outcomes in COVID, while they might seem discouraging on the surface, they actually reinforce our understanding. TA1 is a modulator. It's dependent on context. It's not a universal magic bullet.
It needs the right biological environment.
A system that is suppressible, but not yet irreversibly damaged.
That distinction provides a perfect segue into critical care, specifically sepsis, where immune dysregulation really reaches its deadly peak.
Sepsis is. It's arguably the most challenging environment for an immunomodulator. It's a life-threatening, complex dysregulation. It often involves an initial explosion of inflammation, followed rapidly by a catastrophic, prolonged state of immune paralysis.
which leaves the patient vulnerable to secondary infections and organ failure.
Exactly.
So if TA1 is the adaptive thermostat, how does it handle this kind of extreme climate control problem?
The rationale for its use is to interrupt that deadly trajectory, specifically to prevent or reverse the profound immunosuppression phase that contributes so heavily to patient mortality. And the clinical data supporting this is significant. The sources highlight findings from a meta-analysis which pooled data across multiple trials involving TA1 in sepsis patients.
And what did that meta-analysis find on the most critical outcome measure, which is mortality?
The meta-analysis associated TA1 administration with a statistically significant reduction in 28-day mortality in sepsis patients.
Wow. Okay, that's not a soft biomarker. That is reducing patient deaths within the most critical month of the illness.
It is. In critical care, achieving a statistically reliable reduction in mortality for a condition as complex and varied as sepsis is a massive validation.
That is a staggering data point. It suggests that TA1, when applied in the context of extreme immune exhaustion, is performing a genuinely life-saving function by restoring that immune competence.
It speaks directly to its ability to normalize a dysfunctional system. But we have to recall the nuance again. The data, while strong overall, showed that subgroup effects varied.
Meaning the benefit wasn't uniform across all sepsis patients.
Right. It was highly dependent on the type of patient. Did they have viral or bacterial sepsis? Were they lymphopenic at the start?
Mm-hmm.
Was the TA1 giving within the first 24 hours or 72 hours? This heterogeneity is why sepsis research is so challenging, but the overall signal regarding reduced mortality suggests its role is foundational.
Let's turn to oncology then. This is arguably the most extensively studied clinical application, where immune regulation is a non-negotiable part of the treatment landscape.
Indeed. As an adjunct therapy in cancer, this is where TA1 research has the longest history. Beyond the early preclinical synergy, there have been large phase 3 studies in humans. These involved malignancies like melanoma, hepatocellular carcinoma, and non-small cell lung cancer.
Okay, tell us about those phase 3 results. How did TA1 perform when it was combined with standard established treatments in these large trials?
So when TA1 was combined with standard therapy, the trials consistently showed very strong trends toward improved response rates and survival.
Trends.
Patients receiving the combination often demonstrated better clinical outcomes, fewer relapses, longer periods of progression-free survival, and better overall survival.
But the sources also make the crucial distinction that primary endpoints were not always met. For someone listening, what is the difference between a strong clinical trend and failing a primary endpoint?
This is an essential point in understanding clinical trials. A primary endpoint is the single predefined measure, usually a specific statistical threshold for overall survival or tumor response rate, that the trial must hit to be considered a definitive success for regulatory approval.
Okay.
When a study shows a trend, it means the data is pointing clearly in the direction of benefit. The patients in the TA1 group lived longer, or their tumor shrank more often. But maybe the sample size wasn't large enough or the patient population was too varied to achieve the specific high level of statistical certainty, that p-value of less than 0.05 required to declare the drug successful for that indication on its own.
So the clinical relevance might be obvious to the doctor treating the patient, but the statistical significance that the FDA, for instance, requires might be missed because of the inherent complexity of late-stage cancer.
Exactly. The benefit is real, but pinning it down statistically against a complex, rapidly evolving disease is hard. And this complexity means TA1 has been used not necessarily as a cure, but for a very specific tactical application within oncology.
And which tactical application is that?
Addressing chemo-induced immune suppression. Aggressive chemotherapy regimens frequently cause severe lymphopenia, a low number of lymphocytes, which includes your T cells. This is incredibly dangerous in advanced cancer patients.
Right, not just because they lose immune surveillance against the tumor.
But because they are highly susceptible to opportunistic infections, which can be fatal. TA1 has been used clinically to reduce chemo-induced lymphopenia and essentially restore those immune numbers. It improves the host's resilience and immune surveillance in advanced settings, like lung and liver cancers.
That is a fundamentally important shift in strategy. It's not about directly shrinking the tumor, but about preserving the patient's capacity to survive the treatment and prevent those secondary drivers of mortality. The evidence from these 11,000 subjects really confirms TA1's role as a strategic tool for maintaining immune health in patients under extreme duress.
It does.
Okay, we've established that TA1 is a potent, sophisticated immunomodulator. It's used across these high-stakes, critically ill patient groups. So given this wide application and decades of research, what's the bottom line on the overall safety profile of thymosin alpha-1?
The safety profile is remarkably favorable, especially when you consider its potent action. Across decades of human data, the consensus is that TA1 is generally well tolerated.
And when you compare this profile to the drugs it's often co-administered with,
like strong antiviral agents or toxic chemotherapy, the safety margin is substantial. It's a very clean molecule in that regard.
What are the specific adverse events that were consistently reported in these trials? Anything serious?
The reported adverse events were almost universally mild and transient. They typically include local reactions at the injection site, which is, you know, common for any subcutaneous administration.
A little redness or soreness.
Exactly. Beyond that, some patients experience transient flu-like symptoms or some generalized fatigue. But serious adverse events that were directly attributed to TA1 are rare.
That suggests a large therapeutic window. You can give an effective modulatory dose without serious worry of toxicity. However, we are altering a very delicate biological system. What are the specific theoretical concerns that remain when you're talking about the inherent complexity of altering immune balance?
The concerns shift from direct toxicity to the theoretical risks of immune manipulation, particularly in vulnerable populations. The first major theoretical concern involves patients with pre-existing autoimmune diseases.
Like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, MS.
Right. If TA1's function is to enhance or normalize a T-cell response in autoimmunity, the T-cells are the very agents attacking the body. So the risk is...
You can make it worse.
You could potentially exacerbate the autoimmune condition. While TA1 is often regulatory and helps balance the system, the unpredictability of increasing immune activity in an already self-attacking system is a major point of caution. It requires strict clinical oversight. You're navigating a razor's edge there.
And the second major concern would logically be patients who are deliberately immunosuppressed.
Exactly. Patients who've had an organ transplant or those receiving aggressive therapy for a severe autoimmune condition, they're often on potent immunosuppressive drugs to keep their immune system quiet.
So introducing TA1.
An agent designed to enhance or normalize T-cell activity could potentially counteract the effects of that necessary immunosuppressive medication. It's a critical drug interaction concern. It's a conflict of biological interest, and the clinical outcomes could be very unpredictable.
This complexity really underscores why the heterogeneity we talked about earlier is such a practical limitation.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that outcomes were non-uniform in COVID-19 and they varied across sepsis subgroups, that's not necessarily a flaw of the molecule itself.
Not at all.
It's a reflection of how difficult it is to use an immunomodulator correctly.
That is precisely the case. The lack of uniform results reinforces that clinical context is everything. The patient's baseline immune state, the specific phase of their illness, the precise timing of TA1 administration, all of that is paramount.
So a patient who is hyperinflamed might not benefit or could even be harmed.
While a patient who is sinking into immunosuppression is likely to benefit greatly, the molecule is robust, but the clinical setting demands extreme precision.
So we have a generally safe molecule that's incredibly effective when used in the right biological context, but we still need better tools to define what that context is.
That's the challenge. And that takes us directly to the future of this research.
Okay, we have this massive foundation of evidence, 11,000 subjects, but research never stops. What are the critical, unanswered questions that still challenge researchers about the optimal, most precise application of TA1?
The open questions largely focus on achieving maximum therapeutic precision, especially in oncology. Since TA1 is an adjunct, we need to determine its optimal fit within today's hyper-complex cancer treatment regimens.
Like when to give it.
Exactly. Should it be scheduled before chemotherapy to precondition the immune system? During chemo to mitigate lymphopenia? Or after chemo to support immune surveillance? These details, the timing, the scheduling, are crucial for realizing that synergistic potential we saw back in the preclinical phase.
And the face of cancer therapy is changing constantly. The introduction of drugs like checkpoint inhibitors has revolutionized oncology by freeing the T cells to fight. Where does TA1 fit into that new landscape?
This is the major cutting-edge research question right now. Can modern immune oncology combinations benefit from TA1? Checkpoint inhibitors like PD-1 and CTLA-4 blockers, they essentially work by removing the immunological brakes that tumors use to shut down T-cell attacks.
They're designed to unleash existing T-cells.
Correct. But if the patient is suffering from advanced cancer and has been immune exhausted or rendered lymphopenic by prior chemotherapy, they might not have a robust T-cell population left to unleash.
Right. You take the brakes off a car that has no engine and nothing happens.
Exactly. And TA1's documented ability to enhance T-cell maturation, proliferation, and function suggests it could act as the necessary engine starter. It could potentially ensure a healthy, active population of T-cells is present, allowing the checkpoint inhibitors to then remove the brakes and launch a highly potent, sustained attack.
That potential synergy TA1 providing the T-cell population and checkpoint inhibitors maximizing their engagement, that is a really compelling hypothesis. It could radically improve treatment efficacy in patients who currently don't respond well to immunotherapy.
It is the next frontier. But to realize that potential, we have to answer a prior essential question.
Which is?
What biomarkers reliably predict which patients will benefit most from TA1?
We need objective, measurable biological signals that guide clinical decisions.
Precisely. We need to move beyond general indicators like white blood cell counts. We need to identify specific, precise markers, perhaps specific cytokine ratios or detailed subset ratios of helper versus killer T cells, the CD4-CD8 ratio, or even specific gene expression profiles within the immune cell.
Things that clearly signal a patient is in an immunosuppressed state that TA1 is best suited to correct.
Yes. Without these reliable predictors, we risk misapplication. We risk giving this powerful modulatory peptide to patients whose immune dysfunction is either too far gone or, you know, resistant to this specific mechanism.
So the future of TA1 isn't necessarily about finding new diseases to treat, but about refining its application, making sure only the right patients get it at the right time. That's precision medicine in its highest form.
It is. And the early immuno-oncology research is already pointing the way. Early signals suggest TA1 might indeed enhance checkpoint inhibitor therapies. And if that's proven, it would fundamentally change the standard of care for several cancers. This potential synergy is being investigated rigorously right now in dedicated clinical trials.
A lot to look forward to there.
To synthesize our deep dive then, the core conclusion regarding thymosin alpha-1 is based on concrete evidence. It is a well-studied, generally well-tolerated immunomodulatory peptide. It has a deep body of evidence, over 11,000 subjects, supporting its utility in complex clinical scenarios like chronic infection, sepsis, and as an adjunct in oncology.
Mm-hmm.
And its mechanism is sophisticated. It's enhancing T-cell competence and promoting cytokine balance. It emphasizes regulation, not just indiscriminate boosting.
This whole journey reinforces a key theme of the deep dive, that the immune system is just far too complex for simplistic generalized interventions. TA1 stands as this fascinating example of a naturally occurring molecule that has been successfully leveraged as a sophisticated biological tool.
It has.
A tool to normalize and optimize fundamental human defense mechanisms, especially in conditions of profound stress or dysregulation.
This molecule truly forces us to appreciate the delicate balance that is required for our survival.
And that leads us to our final provocative thought for you, the listener, to mull over long after this deep dive concludes. While TA1 has demonstrated broad efficacy in modulating immune responses, the inherent non-uniformity of the results, like the mixed outcomes in COVID-19 compared to the hard reduction in sepsis mortality, it highlights a profound challenge in modern medicine. How do we tailor generalized immunomodulation using molecules like TA1 to an individual's unique immunological state? And what does the future of precision immune therapy look like if a simple 28 amino acid peptide can have such complex, context-dependent regulatory effects?
It's a huge question.
If this level of nuance exists for a naturally occurring peptide, the predictive biomarkers necessary for the next generation of targeted biological medicines are the ultimate frontier.
Mm-hmm.
Food for thought, indeed. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into thymosin alpha-1. We'll see you next time.